Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreestyleLibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at FreestyleLibre.us.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show, only in the new Chosen app. Download The Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
The following is an actor portrayal.
With Kindley Assisted Living and Memory Care at Asbury Methodist Village in Montgomery County, you can anticipate more. But don't take our word for it.
My dad moved to Kindley and loved it. His apartment was spacious, sunny, and overlooked Parkland. It was a great comfort to me to see him always smiling and involved in the life at Kindley.
Enjoy quality on-site nursing and rehab services, too. Visit kindleyatasbury.org today. Equal opportunity housing provider.
Welcome to the Fandrax Toolshed. If you love Dynasty Leagues and prospects, you came to the right place, because that's what this show is all about. Covering the majors and all levels of the minor leagues to give you the leg up in your Dynasty Leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 60 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clegg and Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have another fun episode in store for you today with a great guest. And with me, as always, is my partner in crime, Chris Clegg, who we will refer to as the champ for this episode, are now the reigning World Series champions. What's up, champ?
Oh, man, it feels good. Last time we recorded, it was the game. It happened. It kept me sane the first couple of days that we recorded. You know, I probably would have been super stressed, but at least had a little distraction while we were recording and then finished it off. It still feels good. Man, I can't believe it. So I bought a lot of World Series gear, probably spent too much money, but it's okay because
you have to.
For the first time in 26 years, the Braves are World Series champs, and I'm very, very excited. And we'll be champions for another year, which is exciting. So, yeah, good to be
exactly.
here.
Exactly. That's why I kept telling myself, you know, the year the Red Sox, I forget after which World Series it was, but like there was a year like we were just out of it pretty early. I'm like, well, we're still the champs. Even though we're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, we are still the champs.
Still the reigning champs, baby. So it'll
Can't
be that
take
way
that away until somebody else wins it, right?
Nope. And we will be forever champions.
You got that. So hopefully you guys can re-sign Freddie Freeman. So.
They better. I'm a go to Atlanta and find, or actually, I'll probably have to go to Colorado to kill somebody from Liberty Media if they don't re-sign him. Because they're, you know, a stupid media company that doesn't give a rip about baseball. And I don't know why they own the Braves, but another story, another day.
Right. So let's hope that he stays for your mental, physical, and emotional well being. Let's hope Freddie Freeman stays with the Atlanta Braves. He probably will, but we will see. Now we bring on our guest. His bio reads: fantasy baseball connoisseur, reader of the content, listener of the pods, manager of the leagues, our good buddy Mags is in the house. Mags, how you doing, man? Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Eric. Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me on. Very, very excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. We've been in a couple leagues together. You're a very smart and knowledgeable dynasty player, so we just come on, have a nice chat about dynasty leagues and how to get into them and strategy, and just have this nice little free-flowing conversation, hit on a lot of different topics. It'll be a fun show. Before we get into the show, the usual housekeeping. You can find us all on Twitter. Mags is at Mags_S20. I am at AirCross04. Chris is at RotoClegg, and our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/FantraxToolshed, for extra content from both Chris and I. And, of course, check out all the other great written and audio work we have on the Fantrax HQ network, including our other podcasts, SB Streamer, Fantasy Hockey Life, Fantasy Football Addicts, Define Fantasy Football, and Fantasy Football POV. Let's get right into this week's episode here, talking, you know, strategy and everything like I just mentioned. I guess let's just start with how we all got into Dynasty baseball here, and Mags, you were sharing you had a really good story about how you kind of got into Dynasty in particular. You'd been playing fantasy baseball for a little bit, then you got into Dynasty. So if you want to go ahead and share that for the listeners, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, I've been playing fantasy baseball. I mean, just go back maybe 10 years. I've been playing leagues, some keeper leagues, some redraft leagues, nothing too serious, mostly just playing with friends and everything like that. I grew up, you know, just loving everything baseball, and, you know, played baseball, and huge Cubs fan, just really enjoyed, you know, everything related to Major League Baseball. But I don't think I appreciated what a dynasty league was like, and what it could offer me, as a fan and as a player. And so I think in 2018, I was asked to take over a home league team that was kind of a dynasty keeper hybrid team. And, you know, I was into it, but not super into it. And then in 2019, right before the season started, I got diagnosed with cancer. And I was like, early 30s. And I, you know, when a moment like that happens, you kind of, you're looking for something to kind of be an outlet. And, you know, I went through chemo treatments and everything like that. And during that time, I had a lot of sleepless nights. And I was like, well, I have this team that I, you know, maybe I should try to make it a better team, because it was a takeover team that wasn't very good. And I actually look back, and the first trade that I made in that league that season was the day after I got diagnosed with cancer. So, I mean, I was basically like, I'm just going to do this. Ended up making like 50 trades or something like that. It was ridiculous. And during that time was searching for tools to become a better player, and came across a lot of the work, actually, Eric, that you did over at Fantrax. Also some other great writers as well. Started listening to podcasts and just kind of little by little made trades and really enjoyed that. And then during the COVID season, I was actually following one of the Fantrax mock drafts on Twitter. And I made some comments about that draft. And Ben Wilson, who was at Fantrax at the time, noted that and reached out to me and was like, hey, we're doing a 30-team startup. Would you like to join it? And I was like, sure. And it was a mock draft, I think, at the time. It ended up turning into a 30-rock league. Nate from Dynasty One Stop runs it. Does a great job. And during that time, I just went, so I went from like a 10-teamer to a 30-teamer. And then during COVID, I ended up joining like 5 or 6 more leagues. And I learned a lot. And I have, you know, had success so far in those leagues. I think I finished top 3 and or top 2 in 5 of my 7 leagues. Yeah, had a really good season this year, and just basically in all things Dynasty, really, really passionate about it.
Yeah, that's a great story. I always love to hear how everybody, you know, got into playing fantasy baseball, whether it's redraft, Dynasty, keeper, whatever, because everyone has a different story. It's fantasy baseball means something different to everybody, whether it's something you do to make some money, something you do for fun, an outlet because you're got some tough stuff going on in your lifetime. So thank you for sharing that, Matt, because that was great. Chris, you know, for the listeners out there, how did you get into Dynasty baseball?
Yeah, so, you know, for the longest time, actually not even for the longest time, I played fantasy baseball back in the day with some friends. Like, you know, it wasn't anything competitive that I really cared that much about. I did it because I liked baseball. And then I got into a pretty competitive redraft league with one of my buddies. He invited me, and I didn't know the other guys other than him. And that was in 2015. Ended up winning the league the first year, and then he ended up having an opening in his Dynasty Keeper Hybrid League the next year. So I ended up joining that as well. And that kind of got me really hooked on that format, that style play. The fact that keep your teams the same year to year, and it's like really being the GM, like that was very appealing to me. I've always enjoyed minor league baseball, so the prospect side of that was a big appealing thing to me. You know, after that, I found a random Dynasty League to join, and I ended up starting one. And then, you know, just kind of evolved from there and in a lot of Dynasty Leagues. And so it kind of started just from a redraft league, and then got into that Dynasty League, built a passion for it. And that's really where my passion is. And, you know, we always talk about being well-rounded and, you know, being, you know, efficient in redraft and Dynasty and Keeper. Like, that's the goal. But, like, my heart's really with Dynasty Leagues. Like, that, I think that's probably my favorite format. And so, yeah, this is obviously why we have a pod about Dynasty and prospects, because that's what we love. So it's been a blast. And, you know, the more time I spend doing prospect stuff, just the more I love it. So, yeah, we're all in 30 Rock together, and it's a great experience for sure. That's how we got to know Mags. And, you know, Mags is like one of the better players that I've seen for sure. And so, like he mentioned, he's a reader and a listener, but he competes against all these guys that spend a ton of time writing, and he's right there in the mix with it, all of them. So I've seen it firsthand, the high performance from Mags. And so he's got a lot of good stuff we're going to share. We're going to dive in on some, you know, strategy here, because I think that's important. And I think, you know, now's a pretty good time to talk about Dynasty strategy, because it's we're getting to that time of year where you may be getting in some startup leagues, or your leagues are just starting back up from the previous year. So we're going to hit on everything. We've got a lot to cover tonight, and it's going to be a great show, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
As am I. Yeah. And for me, I started playing Keeper Dynasty when I was probably 15 or so, and being the impatient teenager that I was, one season would end, and I'd be like, I don't want to wait until March. I want to do something now. So I think that was really the driving force behind me getting like keeper and dynasty. We started my first one ever was a keeper league with my friends that we started sophomore year of high school, which actually started as a redraft league, but I got Albert Pujols. This would have been 2005. Wow. Older than that. 2005. And I got Albert Pujols with the second overall pick in that draft. And I loved Pujols. So I'm like, I always want to have Pujols. Let's turn this into a keeper league. And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. Let's do it. So that's how we kind of started doing it. And then I've gotten them more and more. And yeah, just the year round aspect of it really was intriguing to me because, yeah, like I said, I didn't want to have like this multi month layoff or, all right, you're done. Yeah, you do some research and start getting prepped for next year. But I like making trades in November and, you know, you get your first year player drafts and, you know, all that stuff that's going on in the offseason to kind of get you through until draft season starts up in a few months. So that was really the big lure for me. So I love playing all sorts of different variety of leagues. I do redraft, I do dynasty, I do keeper in the middle. Just kind of keep things fresh and not have too many of the same leagues. But yeah, that is my kind of entry story into dynasty baseball. And I'm glad I did it because I love it. But let's get into some of the topics we have here. Like I said, we have some set topics and stuff we want to discuss, but it'll probably just be a pretty free-flowing episode. And I guess, like, you know, let's start with just getting into Dynasty, like selecting a format, you know, your overall strategy. You know, Chris, I'll go to you. And I already broke my rule of calling you champ. I haven't called you champ since I mentioned that, so I'm already breaking my own rule here. But champ, you know, when you're looking to get into a league, what are some of the things that you look at when you're getting into it?
Yeah, so first off, like, I want variety. Like, I don't want all the same. So, you know, that's kind of what I've come to terms with is looking at a different strat, like, I guess a different type league. So I don't want to have 5-12-team dynasty leagues where you keep everybody at the same amount of prospects. So having the variety is important. And so when we look at, like, the keeper versus dynasty aspect, I think it's important that we define those. And so a dynasty league would be one where you keep every single player year to year. In a keeper league, you're keeping a certain amount of players. And so, you know, you have those leagues where they kind of, you know, can go borderline between where you're keeping like 20 out of your like 23 or whatever per se. So like those are pretty close to full dynasty. And so I would say the more you keep, the closer it is to a full dynasty.
Right.
So yeah, like, you know, you want to look at that stuff. And obviously, like, I've taken over teams before. I've done startups. Like, I'd always prefer to do a startup. Like, taking over a team that isn't yours is tough because you may be a totally different style player than that person before you drafted or however they played. So that makes it a challenge. And maybe that's a good challenge in a way. Sometimes it's fun to take over an orphan team where, you know, it's really struggling. You have to rebuild it. So that aspect's fun. But yeah, so those are a couple things like off the bat. Like, I, you know, try to have good variety and obviously prefer startup if possible.
Yeah. Now, put you on the spot here. What is your favorite, league number of teams? Like 12, 15, 20, 30? What's your favorite if you had to pick one?
From a pure dynasty standpoint, I'd probably just go like 15. I think it's a comfortable, like 10 to 12 is kind of shallow, especially with prospects. Like 15 is a good number where you get a good variety and it's deep enough for a challenge. I love the challenge of a 30 team is insane, where in 30 Rock we have, you know, what we roster 60 players, so 1800 guys in the player pool are rostered, which is, you know, kind of nuts. But yeah, I think 15 is that pretty sweet spot where it's not too shallow, it's not too deep, it's still, I mean, all are fun, but you know, I kind of lean that way.
Yeah, 30, the 30 Rock is actually my second 30 teamer. I had another 30 teamer way back, probably 2012, 13 with my buddy Greg, and it was terrible. It was, the league was just so convoluted. It was so confusing. It was like way over the top detailed. It was just ridiculous. So we ended up popping out after our first year. But I remember the highlight was the first thing we had to do after we took over was do the first year player draft. And who do we take in the second round? And this is me, like, I was 21, 22. I was into prospects, you know, but not like as into it and knowledgeable as I am now. But I took him just because this guy had a lot of power and he was freaking huge. It was Aaron Judge. We got Aaron Judge. Too bad we never actually got to see that pan out and have him turn into the beast he is now. But yeah, so we drafted Aaron Judge in whatever round that was and whatever year it was. But yeah, 30 teams are great. It gives you a little bit of added, you know, not every team is stacked with all-stars throughout. So that makes it, you know, a little more fun, a little more challenging. But Mags, how about you?
No, I started in the 10 teamer, as I mentioned, and then I branched, went straight to the 30 teamer, and then I kind of wanted to get a few more different types of leagues as well, because
went from 10 to 30, made that 10, you know, zero to 60 right off the bat.
Exactly. but now I am looking at the portfolio I have. I think I have a 10 teamer, a 16 teamer, a 20 teamer, a 24 teamer, and then I'm in 3 30 teamers. So if I'm having to pick a preference, I think I agree with Chris that the 15, 16 team size is kind of the happy medium. I think the 16 teamer I'm in, it's a 16 team roto 5x5 with OBP and quality start. If I had to recommend something to someone, that kind of wanted to experience like what a true dynasty is like, I think that's a good size. Now my 10 teamer is a lot of fun and it's a home league. But the shallower the league, I've noticed it's really about getting the elite talent, right? Like whether it's at the MLB level or even being more willing to take prospects earlier. I mean, the elite bats and the elite arms, and that's how you win the shallow leagues. The deeper you get, the more valuable just having depth is. And I think that's the biggest difference that I noticed when I went from doing the shallow league to the deep league is guys like Adam Engel are now valuable. And before that, you're not even, you know, thinking about someone like that, or Joey Wendell, who was my starting third baseman for like half of the season, in 30 rounds. So things like that, are really important, I think. And then the other thing to me that is, you have to think about is what kind of style do you want? Do you want to play a roto league? Do you want to play a head to head? Do you want to play a points league? Points Dynasty, the only experience I've had with that is the TDBC through Prospects Live. But Roto head-to-head, I think I've talked to a lot of people. I've played in both. My view is that the Roto format is probably the best format for really determining who the best managers are, because it really is about, you know, hitting all those categories. And it's from the beginning of the season to the end, is your team the best? I think that is a good gauge, and for me that's why one of the reasons I was interested in getting into a pseudo industry type league that was roto, to really see where I could stack up. But the head-to-head format, especially in home leagues, is a blast. Even though you may have an unlucky week or two and have a great team and end up losing, I think it does keep people energized. So my advice would be, like, if you want to be in more than one league, you know, I would think it would be advisable to try a roto league, try a head-to-head league, and kind of figure out what works best for you and what you enjoy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mix it up. I do, yeah, mostly, like, the one I play the most is roto, but I do have some different formats. Like my home league, the one I mentioned that we started in high school, it's head-to-head, because, you know, the one fun thing about that is, you know, roto league, sometimes end of the year, can the standings can get kind of stagnant, not a lot of movement. But, you know, with head-to-head, you get the playoffs. And I think a lot of the people listening, like, especially people that we have on our Patreon, that we kind of meet with month to month in our 80 grade tier, that go over a lot of their leagues primarily were head to head from what we saw. So I think that's, you know, still the favorite amongst the majority of the listeners of our show. And I have no issues with head to head. Like I said, I've been playing it. That's actually the league the format I grew up on when I was a teenager, and you get the playoffs, so that could be fun. But then it has the downfalls of, there have been several years when I've had been the number one team, then you lose in the playoffs if you had one bad week, because I don't know, Garrett Cole got blown up twice or something like that. You know, anything can happen in one week. We know that with baseball. It's a challenging sport. You know, even Juan Soto can go 2 for 27 in a week. You know, it happens. It's not like basketball where it's like, all right, you know, Durant's got to get his points. You know, Antetokounmpo's got to get his. But, you know, baseball, it's a lot tougher. And even the stars can have bad weeks. So, yeah, that's definitely great to kind of change it up and find what you like and try different things. And, yeah.
The roto versus head-to-head debate, or just the thinking about it, kind of reminds me a little bit about how Major League Baseball used to, like, way back in the day, was just the minor league, the National League pennant winner and the American League pennant winner, and they play in the World Series. That's kind of similar to roto, in my opinion. I mean, obviously they still met, but, like, it's, are you the best? Head to head, though, I mean, like, it's kind of like what we have with the wild card now, right? Like, you can have a team that wins less than 90 games, like the Braves, and win the World Series. But it's a lot of fun and everyone enjoys it. So I think you just have to understand what you're getting. But I think both formats have their place.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, if MLB was Roto, the Dodgers would have won, like, what, half the NL pennants in the last decade or something like that? Like,
yeah.
It'd be no fun, right?
Yeah.
Like, we love postseason. I think that's kind of the allure, too, for people that are just getting into fantasy baseball that have watched real-life baseball, is that they see the playoffs, and they say, all right, playoffs. So I can kind of see how that would be alluring to people that are just getting into it. Like, it was for me when I was 15 years old. I still kind of like it. Like I said, I do play more Roto now, but I do like head-to-head, too. But, it's always a debate over what's the best. But, just play what you like, you know? That's what I always say. Play what you like. It's for you. Who cares what anybody else says? Do what you want to do. It's your money or your time, your effort. So play what you want to play. If you want to play head-to-head, you play head-to-head. If you want to have those random stat quarter categories out there, you want to have defensive fielding percentage, you go right ahead and have that. It's your league. Moving on here, a couple other things we got here. Let's go over to, like, contracts versus keep forever. Mags, do you play in both those types of formats? Do you have any contract leagues, or are you mostly keep forever type in your dynasty leagues?
So I tried the contracts format, but I tried it as a takeover team. So I did it once in Ottawa and then once with some people that I met through 30 Rock actually asked me to join one. It's really difficult as a rebuild. So I think my advice would be, if you want to do a contracts league, do it as a startup, because then, one, you can really understand the rules because you're, like, in it from the beginning. And also, I think it's more challenging to just tear down a team and rebuild when there's salary caps attached. I mean, if you just have some bad salaries, you're just kind of stuck behind the eight ball. So I know people that play them, they really enjoy them. I mean, it's certainly more like the MLB system, because everyone has a dollar value. But I do think for beginners or for people that are taking over a team or just kind of wanting to get, you know, interested in Dynasty, I don't think it would be the format that I would recommend starting with, for sure.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a deeper challenge, I'd say. You know, I'm not in a contracts league. I've played them before. I don't know. It's way more time consuming. That's what I found. And so that was when you play in so many leagues, like, it takes a lot of effort to be in a contract league. So that was kind of my downfall, I guess, was the time commitment. So, you know, I just prefer to play a keep forever type. But I think that, you know, this, what we've talked about so far, just kind of goes back to, it's important to know your league rules. And I know that seems really, really simple, but there's so much complexity to Dynasty. Like, we looked at, you know, keeper and dynasty, like, how many are you keeping? You have to think about that if you're not in a true dynasty. And, you know, if you're taking over a team, there's so much to think about, even in the startup. And we're going to go specific in a startup, you know, fairly shortly, looking at how we handle it, what we do, and then contracts, all this stuff, the draft style, from like an auction to a snake draft, a slow to a live draft, so many different things, the scoring settings, and all these things really matter. And, like, this is kind of like the preface of all of this, is like, to actually, you know, like, approach a strategy and execute a strategy, you have to know everything up front. And as we talk about this tonight, like, there's so many different things that matter. Like, you know, a 10 team league is so different than a 30 team. So, like, you have to know all this stuff and understand that, like, there's not like a cookie cutter mold to all this too. So yeah, kind of off tangent there, but yeah.
No, all good. All good. That's, we do that from time to time on this show. And another thing, kind of going back to the difference between, like, you know, shallow and deeper leagues that I forgot to mention. You know, we had somebody ask us in our in Discord, the Toolshed Patreon Discord, about, like, they were doing a startup dynasty draft, and they had a number 3 overall pick, and they ended up getting like, what was it, like 10 picks for that one pick? Like,
it was it was good picks.
So they had like 10 or 11 picks in the first like 5 or 6 rounds or whatever it was. So they ended up getting like 20 of the top 200 in a 20 team league. So that's, if you do something like that, like, yeah, trading away, you know, what I would have been probably either Soto, Acuna, Tatis, Vlad, someone like that. Yeah, that can sting. But if you're going to get all that talent, like this, go back to something Mag said about getting, you know, the deeper you go, getting that depth, and in a startup league to have that type of depth with top talent players getting, you know, like, you know, 20 of the top 200 or wherever it ended up being for that guy, that is absolutely clutch. Yeah, and you know, and for me, I'm not a big fan of contract leagues. You know, I'm more in the keep forever. But if you want to, you know, kind of, you know, dice it up a little bit and change it up and get something different, you know, maybe go, you know, limits on keeper. Like, you only keep like players for 5 years or, you know, something like that. You know, do something along those lines. So it's not like, all right, so and so can have Ronald Acuna for the next 12 years until he gets into his mid 30s and starts declining, and like, oh, they can get rid of him. You know, maybe put something like that onto it, so someone doesn't have the same players and there's more turnover in the league, and you know, you can have Acuna for, you know, or if they have, you know, salary on them, like that increases, so at some point it'll be too expensive. So there's a lot of different ways you can go about that for sure. Let's get back into kind of like the startup version of this though. You know, auction versus snake, slow draft versus live draft. Now, what do you guys prefer, Mags? What are your thoughts there?
I prefer the snake draft, and I prefer slow draft. I think the reason I prefer that, one, I've had some more experience with that recently, but just the way, and we can get into this a little bit, my strategy, I really like having the time to kind of think through what my picks are going to look like and really plan on the board. Mm-hmm. Live drafts, they can be fun for like the first year player draft portion, or maybe something like that, where you're, you know, it's a shorter draft and you're just, you kind of look at a subset of players. But for a startup where you're investing time over, and I think also redraft versus dynasty, you know, you're going to have this team for several years and hopefully a long time if the league doesn't fold. And so you want to make sure that you're planning it out properly. So I think a slow draft helps with that. Now, obviously, you have to counter with the fact that maybe there'll be one or two managers that take a long time to make all their picks. But generally speaking, I do like the slow draft format. And while I've done a little bit of auction, I think it's kind of like the contracts format. If you're going to do it, you really have to know the format and really invest in the time to learn it. Otherwise, you can, I think, just come out of it and be like, well, what is my, I can't believe I have this team, because you're just not prepared for it. It takes a lot more preparation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And first, if you're going to do an auction draft, I highly recommend going and check out, you know, Ariel Cohen's stuff. He does some great work on auction strategy and how to value players and tiers and all that sort of, all everything to go around auctions. So go check out his stuff. He's great with auctions and other things as well. Go check out his podcast, Beat the Shift, as well. Great podcast. Love Ariel. But for me, yeah, I do more snake. I think that's when I do probably, I'd say 80%+ of the time. But the fun thing about auction drafts, for me at least, is, you know, something we've all done it. We'll figure out, you know, the draft order. And whether it's, you know, KDS or just randomly assigned, you get like 10th pick. You're like, damn, I can't get Soto, or I can't get Vlad Jr. or whoever you want, because I have too low of a pick. With auction, you can go get anybody you want. You want to blow 2/3 of your budget on 3 guys and you want to get Soto, Acuna, and Tatis? You can go do that. So that's kind of the allure for me, is you can get anybody you want. I think that's the allure for some people too, is that they want to get the players that they want to have. You know, if you want to have fun and get your favorite players, you can do that in auction. You can't always do that in redraft. Yeah, you can if you want to, you know, jump a few rounds or so, but at the top it gets a little harder. But Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I'm mostly all, you know, snake drafts. You know, I actually am pretty intrigued. I want to consider doing a startup dynasty that's an auction, like a slow auction, which will kind of be insane. But I think that'd be a lot of fun.
I've never done a slow auction. I've only done like 2-minute clocks, or, you know, the whatever the normal thing you want to call it for auction.
Just take so long. Auction. And for dynasty, like if you're going deep enough, I feel like you have to do a slow one. You know, we did a mock for the NBC Sports Edge magazine last year, and it was like a just a typical roto redraft auction. It took like 4.5 hours for like 23 rounds. So like you can imagine a dynasty where you have 50 guys, like you have to commit all day. So it had to be a slow one. And I don't even know what that looked like, but I think it'd be really fun.
Yeah, auction leagues are their own beast. It gets really fun though. Like I just had one recently for a fantasy basketball league that I'm in with just some friends from home. We've done auction for the last several years. It's fun too because we all get like pissed off at each other. Like if there's multiple players or multiple people that want the same player, we're all bidding each other up, and like you can bid up your friend just because you want them to pay $5 more for that player. Like my buddy did that. My boy's Luka Doncic, and my buddy added like a few bucks to make me go a little higher. So it's this whole own dynamic for sure. But yeah, again, whatever you want to play, if you want to do auction to get your guys, you go ahead and do auction. Next thing we have on, you know, let's go over to daily versus weekly lineups and fab. Fab is something I'm trying to get better at fab. Vlad Sedler is like the fab whisperer. Go check out his stuff in regards to the fab strategy and what he does during the season. He's great when it comes to fab. But yeah, daily versus weekly. I love both, actually. I was always a daily guy for the longest time. After I got into the industry, a lot more weekly as well. I'd probably say I'm pretty split 50-50 right now in terms of daily leagues and weekly. You know, 30 Rock is a daily league, and you know, I love daily as well. But weekly adds that extra strategy in where it's like, all right, you gotta make the decision on, you know, whether it's, you know, one lineup change a week, or you've got the two different ones for hitters on Monday and Friday. It's like, all right, is this guy that's, you know, questionable, or I'm using football terminology now, but you know, a guy that's like day to day with like a sore quad or whatever, is that guy got to play, or do you get to play a lesser guy that might play two more games during that period? So that is that's definitely a different dynamic for sure. Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was just all daily. And, you know, the more leagues you do, I think weekly definitely has its place. But I do think daily really rewards those who are committed and, yeah, you know, always sure. on the ball. So if you're committed and you're faithful to check your lineups every day, like you can really be rewarded in that daily setting. The weekly adds that new dynamic, and there's certain things you have to think about. With daily, you can just go on and set your lineup with who's starting. Like, you know, a lot of times there's not those questions. You don't have to think about the pitchers as much, like the starters, especially like you do in a weekly league where you really have to think about that. And, you know, in fab, in a dynasty league, it's a whole different beast too. And we're going to talk about that a little bit when we get into the deeper part of the show. But yeah, so fab's its own beast in redraft. I think it's a totally different beast in a dynasty league.
Absolutely. You know, Meg, how about you?
I mostly play daily, but I'm realizing that as I add more leagues, you have to start thinking about how many daily leagues you right. actually handle.
That is a very important part of it. Yeah, like how much time do I have to, especially those that, you know, work day jobs and you got to do the lineups during the week. Yeah, that's definitely important.
I have a routine. Like I'll basically, you know, after, you know, wake up and, you know, get the kids out the door, whatever, before I start work, I'll just check all my teams real quick, just kind of see what I think it's going to be for the day. And then on my lunch break, I'll go back through them again and check. Now, I play only on Fantrax, so the nice thing about that is I can, right. like, just go through them all at once. If I had, like, four or five different platforms, I think it would be more challenging. And then usually, like, right before dinner, I'll check again because every once in a while, you know, they'll do last-minute changes and you'll want to make sure you swap them out for the night games. But I do think it adds a lot of intrigue and fun. Like Chris said, it really rewards those that are you know, dedicated to it. And I think that's a good thing because you want people to be invested in it throughout the season. But I do, like I said, I think you just have to balance it with your time commitments. And for some, weekly just makes more sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Luckily for me, I do play on four different platforms. Like this past year, I was on Fantrax, was at one I had in most leagues in, then probably NFBC, then Yahoo, and then one called On Roto for Tout Wars, which I honestly had never heard of until I got invited to Tout Wars. But luckily, all the NFBC are weekly or bi-weekly, and then Tout was just weekly. So thankfully, that made it easier. I didn't have daily on four different platforms, just on Fantrax and Yahoo. So that definitely helped. Let's go ahead and take a quick break right now. We'll come back on the other side, talk some draft approach, offseason strategy, trading, fab and waiver approach, and a lot more. So don't go anywhere.
Asbury Methodist Village and Montgomery County takes senior living to the next level, creating extraordinary opportunities for a fulfilling future. Work your brain and body in our new wellness center. Stroll our expansive campus and 17-acre nature preserve. Stay sharp with our resident-run college and find so many new ways to get involved and make a difference for others. Anticipate more from your retirement. Visit AsburyMethodistVillage.org today. Your future's here. Equal opportunity housing provider.
All right, welcome back. Let's get into some off-season strategy right now because, you know, that's where we are. It's the off-season right now, unfortunately. We're second week of November right now. World Series is over. Fantasy leagues are over. Well, unless you're drafting for 2022 already, which some of us degenerates are, but not me. I have not done a 2022 draft yet. I'm holding out till December, even though it's really tough when all y'all are out there, like, posting your draft results from NFBC leagues and Fantrax leagues. It's making me regret my decision, but I'm holding strong. A few more weeks, I'll start doing some drafts. But let's talk about some off-season dynasty strategy. First off, let's start, you know, let's say your team hasn't really, you know, done well the last year or a couple of years, and you're like, all right, I'm going to blow it up, start rebuilding. Mags, you know, when that thought first goes through your head, like, all right, I'm going to rebuild, what are your next steps after that?
So first thing I think you have to do if you're going to go through the rebuild, and I've done it. In fact, the first team that I took over was a rebuild format, and I've taken – when you join new leagues, I mean, sometimes that's how you get into a league, is you'd be willing to take on a team when someone's left. So I do think it's important to understand how to handle rebuilding. The first thing that I would do is obviously look at the roster very in-depth and figure out, okay, what are my core pieces that I don't want to move? Or if I'm going to move, it's going to take a lot. Otherwise, these are guys that I want to build around. And you have to identify those. Usually, it's hopefully you have at least some MLB guys that you would like to hold on to. If not, at least identify those core prospects that you want to hold on to. Or maybe it's just, you know, this team is a disaster and we're just going to do a fire sale. But you have to make those decisions before you even look at other rosters. You got to figure out what you have. Once you figure out what you have and you've decided, okay, this is the core that I want to hold on to unless someone blows me away with an offer, then you figure out, okay, these are the guys that I would like to move. Maybe it's an older player that, like a JD Martinez, that is still has, you know, should have a couple of good years ahead of him, but you just, it's not a place, and you figure out who those guys are that you are going to sell. I do like using the trade block, at least in the Trax platform, to just kind of, especially if I'm just joined a league, to get kind of feelers out there and let people know what I have to offer. And then the other thing that I have found is that, especially when you're in multiple leagues, I kind of like to trade in bunches. And what I mean by that is, like, I want to try to make one trade and then build off that trade. So maybe I trade one of my core bats for a couple prospects. Well, now I would like to maybe package the prospects to get something else. I think it helps to kind of trade in like bulk and then take a step back, right? So like when I was making trades in a couple of leagues when I was rebuilding, I'd make like 2, 3, 4 trades in a week. And then I'd take a little bit of a break and kind of say, all right, I've done some stuff now. What does it look like? So I think that's kind of the first step, is figure out what your team is, figure out what your core is, and then start trading. And then I think the last thing I'll say on this point is you obviously want to make sure that you don't, especially if you're joining a new league, you're going to find that early on there are going to be a lot of vultures. They're going to be people that are coming in there, and they just kind of want to test it out. They want to see what you're made of. Like, right. I actually just joined a league recently, and the team that I inherited had a really nice core of top elite prospects. And, you know, within 2 days, I'm getting all these offers for those guys. And they were lower ball offers, in my opinion, but they were really, I think, just testing you out. So you have to understand that those are going to come, and you have to kind of be prepared for you certainly don't want to just make that mistake of fire sailing the elite guys early. But I think you also need to be willing to take some risk. And when you're talking like, you know, top back end 100 or top 200 guys, like, do your research, trust your instincts, but don't be afraid to make some moves and kind of see where it all is. If you just sit back and do nothing, I think you're just going to end up just sitting on that team and it's not, and you're not going to be able to improve it.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a good point there. You know, if I were to do that right off the bat, I'd be like, all right, I'm not, usually there's a leaked message board somewhere. I'm not doing any trades for like a few weeks. Let me assess the team. That's what you got to do first. Absolutely. You got to assess the team. Who do you want to build around? Who are those tradable commodities? Usually, like you mentioned, the veterans, like JD Martinez is a great example. That's a very valuable piece to a team that's like, you know, on the cusp of being a championship caliber team that needs an extra bat. Though, if you're a few years away, by the time you're contending in 2-3 years or whatever, JD will be, what, 35, 36, not quite as good. So not quite as valuable to a team that's in a rebuild. So, yeah, that's a great point. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's tough because you don't want to trade just to trade. So, like, have your price and make sure that price is met. Like, you don't just rebuild and just dump players. Like, that unbalances the league and it's going to make it where you never win, honestly. So the best thing that I think you can do is just really commit to a strategy one way or another. You don't want to be a middling team because middling teams never get good draft picks and they never win. So think about those teams year to year. Like,
it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Tax day is coming.
Oh, no.
But if you sign up for Robinhood Gold's IRA with a 3% match, you can get up to $195 for the 2023 tax year.
Oh, yeah.
Sign up at Robinhood.com/boost by tax day to get the biggest contribution match on the market. Subscription fees apply. You know you got
the most. Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of one that comes to mind from like a pro sports club. It's like a middling ball club, you know, baseball team or
right now, my Celtics are a pretty freaking good example, unfortunately, but
sure.
Baseball. Who's a team that's right around? Let's say, you know, Cincinnati, maybe not Cincinnati.
That might be fair. So like you're good enough to make the playoffs every year, but you're never bad enough to get a good pick, but you're never good enough to win.
Yeah,
so
like
you're
stuck in the middle. What has Cincinnati been like a World Series contender recently? And yeah, they had a number 7 pick, which they used Nick Lodolo, but that was really about it. I don't think they've had any other top 10 picks recently.
I mean, Jonathan India would have been the...
Yeah, that was what, 4 years ago now?
Yeah.
I think? 2017?
Sounds right. The 18 years are just a blur now.
I know, they're all blur now. Maybe 18.
Yeah. Yeah, you just want to commit to something one way or another. Don't just be a middling team. Like, if you're not contending, you need to sell off those older guys that aren't going to be part of your roster. They're more valuable to somebody else. So you got to commit one way or another. Go all in or be willing to rebuild to an extent. And I think people get caught up in the rebuild strategy of you have to take on prospects, and that's not true. Like, you should look to get young major league players. Like, think about if you had traded for Brian Reynolds during his rookie year. Like, people are like, oh, it's not really legit. It wouldn't have cost you that much. But now Brian Reynolds is 26. He's an established 300 hitter, and he's developed power. Like, those are the guys you want to look for. You're wanting to trade for young players that could develop, that are already doing it, because the prospects, you're hoping they do it. The established MLB guys, they're already doing it. Even if they're not doing it at a high level, they could do better than any prospect ever does, because we don't know how a prospect's going to develop. So you want to be willing to say, like, yeah, maybe I'm not stacked with the most top prospects, but if I have young guys that are in the major leagues, then it gives me a good base to build on. And you hope some of those guys develop. And I think that's the way to win, is you take shots on younger MLB guys. And obviously you're not going to get the young stars like Acuña, Tatis, Soto, but that doesn't matter. Like, find those guys that will continue to develop. Cause you know, for the most part, guys continue to develop throughout their younger 20s and hit peak at like 26 or 27. So that's ideally what you're looking at there. So that's what I'm looking to do.
Yeah. Or if you, you know, want to get prospects, get some of the guys that are closer to being ready, like a Josh Young or someone like that, that's going to help you at some point this year. No, I think sometimes that mindset kind of seeps in, like, all right, I need to go out and get just those young upside guys that are like Jason Dominguez or someone like that, or Victor Acosta or Reggie Pressinato. Like, yeah, those are all great talents. Sure, they could work out. Sure, but you got to wait 3-4 years. Like, you're not speeding up your rebuild. You're extending your rebuild doing that. And I'm not saying avoid those guys altogether. Get a few of those. Sure. That's why it kind of goes into my layer your prospects. So you always have like, all right, here's one wave. There's my next wave. There's my next wave type of thing. That's all I always try to approach it. But yeah, get guys like Josh Young. Your young guys are either already going to help you out right off the bat or going to help you in the very near future. So that's definitely a great point. I think people just try to get all the young upside guys, go with the Lucianos and everything that are 2-3 years away. And that's not necessarily, I'm not saying it's wrong, but doing that exclusively can really, really bite you in the butt. And then guess what? 3 years on the road, you got to rebuild again. It's like you almost like got to start over your rebuild at that point if it doesn't work out. So very risky strategy going that route. That kind of leads into our next thing, kind of trading tips here, you know, approaching other managers, you know, negotiating trades. You know, Ian Khan, you know, has talked about this ad nauseum, and it's really having that conversation. Like, the worst thing you can do is just blindly send trade offers back and forth. Every league, whether it's home league with your buddies, you know, a family league, a industry league, even like a Yahoo public league or whatever, people you don't really know. Every league has some sort of, you know, message board. Even if you take it offline and do like a Facebook group or something like that, or a Twitter DM, some way you can get in touch with these people. You know, you don't have to have like this long, you know, drawn out conversation, but like, hey, this is what I'm looking to do. You know, how can we make something work out? What do you need? Have that conversation. Find out where they're at, what they're looking for, position wise, stat wise, because just assuming like, all right, I need a third baseman. I'm going to, you know, talk to this person about third baseman. Maybe they don't have third baseman in trade. Maybe they don't want to do that. So just having that, at least somewhere of a conversation to see where that other person is at is just huge. And I think it's the best way to get off on the right foot with a trading partner, so you can trade with that partner again down the road. Mags, how about you? What are your thoughts on trading and how to really best negotiate a trade?
Certainly agree that developing those relationships is key. Funny story, Craig, Chris and I, we made a trade early on in 30 Rock, and I had not had any conversations with him prior to that trade, and we went back and forth for, I think, a week or so on a Francisco Lindor trade. And from that moment on, like, we both knew that we really enjoyed Dynasty Baseball. It kind of led to more conversations. We've made a few trades since, and really it also turned into a friendship. And I think that there's that component too, that not just to get the deal done, but, you know, I agree that you want to be able to kind of turn these in. And one of the things I enjoy about Dynasty is you can turn it into building relationships with people long-term that share the passion. But in terms of the actual strategy, I think that it's helpful to figure out, one, I guess, are you targeting a specific player? Are you targeting a specific need of a position? And then before you make an offer, really look at the other team's roster, figure out what they need and what, you know, you don't want to say, well, you need this, right? But at least in your mind, have an idea that, okay, they look like they're a little bit weak at third base and I have 2 third basemen or something like that, just to get an idea so that when you can go into those discussions, you're not just blindly, you know, throwing in players. But I don't think it's wrong to be willing to make the first offer. I do see a lot of times that people, they come at you with like, hey, I'm interested in this player, or but then it's like, okay, if you want to, my philosophy is kind of like, if you're targeting a specific player, you should be willing to make an offer. If you're just going to say, I like your players, but you got to tell me all the guys on your team that you like,
it doesn't really
get you where you need to get. My view is like, you want this player? Yeah. I mean, I'll say, yeah, he's available. I mean, let me see what do you have to offer? On the reverse though, if they come after and they make a specific offer for one of my players, Then, you know, maybe I will counter with something, you know, right away, a one-to-one or something like that. The other comment I would say would be, if you're kind of interested in one player, but you don't want to tip your cards, turn it into like a 2-for-2 offer or a 3-for-2 offer, something like that, where you have a couple guys that you're interested in. You really want this one specific player. But I've noticed that if you just say, I would like this player, sometimes good managers will get spooked by that. And they'll say, okay, what am I missing? A good example, I went hard after Logan Webb in one of my leagues. I have several shares, but I went hard after him in one of my leagues. And I ended up not getting anywhere because I think I spooked that manager. He basically realized there was something there that I was interested in, and he ended up holding, and, you know, the rest is history. But so I think it's good to kind of have in mind, okay, I'm targeting this player, but I'm going to send him like a 2-for-2 or something like that. And then if he counters, see which players are still in the counter. And if the guy you want is still in that deal, then you may be getting somewhere. If that guy is pulled right away, well, maybe it's a good indication that he's just not available. So that's one strategy I like to use when I'm negotiating.
Yeah, you know, don't be obvious about who you want, because even if it's just like, hey, I want Logan Webb, they'll be like, all right, this person really wants Logan Webb, then maybe I'll, you know, ask for a little bit more, because they know you really want that player. They'll try to squeeze out every bit of value they can, even if they're not a big Logan Webb fan, you know, they know you are. So they'll try to squeeze out every bit of trade value they can. So that's definitely a good point. Chris, how about you?
Yeah, that's a great point. I always want to list 3 or 4 guys, and I want my key guy to be at the back end of that list, because that way you're not tipping your cards to what you really want. And I think that you brought up a good point, Mags. Like, there's two big turnoffs to me when someone comes to me with a trade. One, it's a crappy blind offer. And then if it's so bad, it's not even worth countering. So you know, just deny it, and then they come back again with another one. That's really a bad pet peeve of mine. So don't do that. And two is just when someone comes to you and says they want these guys, but they're not willing to offer you a deal. So, like, you always need to be willing to do that. And, like, you know, I've probably been guilty of it in the past, but, you know, it's important to look at and I think the most important thing you can do actually is to know the other team's needs specifically. If you do that, it makes negotiating so much easier. You go into it knowing how you can benefit them, and that should be the goal of trading. At the end of the day, like, you want to win the trade, but you should always go into it looking to benefit both teams, because that's how a deal is going to get done. And the thing is, you never know how a deal is going to work out. Like, we look back on trades all the time and be like, wow, you know, we wanted to veto it at the time, but now look at it. And that happens a lot in leagues, where I don't think you should ever veto a deal because you don't know how it's going to turn out. Only veto in the case of collusion, where there's clear cheating, in my opinion. I think that's how it should be. So yeah, I think you should talk to other managers. Like, that's very important, and go into it open-minded and being willing to try to work the best deal for both sides.
You know, another thing I hate, a pet peeve of mine, the quantity over quality offers. Whereas if they'll offer you like a 4-for-1, you're like, nah, I really don't have any interest in that. They're like, all right, what if I add this person? What if I add this guy? And then all of a sudden it's like 7-for-1. I'm like, you're not really adding any quality. You're adding this like back end, whether it's like, you know, adding back end major league guys that aren't good or like lower level prospects. I'm like, I don't like quantity offers. Like, it's like, oh, well, these three guys can make up like the value of a Cunha and what he can do stats wise. I'm like, yeah, but you're not factoring in the other two guys I could, you know, add, you know, with a Cunha. So it's like, I hate the quantity over quality offers. Don't be that person. Like, don't be like, all right, let's just offer a bunch of crap for a good player. That will never get you anywhere. And that'll make me not want to trade with you, which goes back to our thing. Like, if you have like you two, Mags, Chris, you had that good experience your first time trading with each other. Now you want to go back and maybe like, all right, I need whatever it is. Like, all right, maybe, you know, Mags, if you're like, all right, I need a shortstop. Like, all right, maybe I'll go to Chris right off the bat, see what he can do. Like, building those relationships, like, you don't want to be the guy that nobody wants to trade with. Then, you know, it gets boring, and then you don't get any better, and it's just not fun. So don't be the person nobody wants to trade with. Establish those relationships. I think that's the if you could take away one thing from this little segment, is build relationships and build good relationships. You don't want to be the person nobody wants to trade with. So I think that's the key thing here. Moving on, you know, a lot of leagues have, you know, first year player drafts coming up here. Some have them in November. Most of them, you know, more so in January. But I guess let's talk a little bit about approaching your first year player draft. And I guess the one thing I'll start by saying is, you know, as a lot of people have, you'll tweet at me like, hey, I already have, like, you know, my top 10 hitters, prospects are all, my top 10 prospects are all hitters. Should I take Jack Leiter 1-1? I'm like, okay, well, Jack Leiter's not a bad 1-1. I won't fault anybody for that, but don't take with prospects, and especially with first year player drafts, I throw positioning right out the window. I don't care if I could have Bobby Witt Jr., CJ Abrams, Nolan Marte, and Anthony Volpe on my minor league team. I'll still take Marcelo Mayer, number one. If that's, you know, get the talent. First off, these guys all change. Like, I'd say, I don't know, there's a percentage. Like, I'd have to look that up. But a lot of these guys change positions, especially the middle infielders. Like, Abrams can move over to second, to outfield. Some guys outgrow, move over to third. Guys from third move over to first. There's so many moving parts in the minor leagues, and it could depend on depth at the major league level too. So don't get too caught up in positioning. Just get the best talent, and that, you know what, that's what trading is for. You got too many shortstops, boom, you can trade some away. So that's what trading's for. But Mags, with your first year player drafts, what is your approach going into those drafts?
Definitely agree that you should not worry about his position as much. Build the assets with, but another important thing that I've learned, make sure, getting back to the league settings thing, make sure it's a true first-year player draft, or is it a first-year player draft that also allows free agent picks? And that's something that I'm seeing more of, is where your first-year player draft actually includes, like, guys that just aren't on teams. And in some leagues, including, like, in a 16-teamer, that will allow you to draft players that just, for whatever reason, were not drafted, and you may not even have to make that first-year player draft pick. A couple examples from last year, one of my leagues, like Jonathan Classe and Gunnar Henderson, players like that were available in the first-year player draft because they were free agents that weren't drafted. So make sure that you understand that component. But then in terms of, let's say, it's just purely first-year player draft only, I tend to agree that I like to focus on the hitters usually, unless it's a college pitcher that I feel very confident about. But even then, I mean, like Asa Lacy was supposed to be one of those safe college pitchers, and he might be okay, but, you know, he came out of the gate and struggled at first. So there is a lot of examples of pitchers that struggle early. I tend to look hitter, either a high school hitter, high school bat with a lot of upside, or a college hitter in some drafts. And then I think another important point is to remember that not all the top MLB talent is always the top first-year player draft picks. Some of those guys are going to be guys that were drafted later in the first-year player draft, or in some cases drafted later in the MLB draft. And so a good example is what happened this year. I mean, three of the standout prospects from last year's first-year player draft, Tyler Soderstrom, Kay Cavalli, Jordan Walker, all of those guys were going, the end of the 20s, maybe 30s in a first-year player draft.
Yeah.
So, and they're three of the top prospects out of that class. And so I think some people think, well, I have to get a top five pick. Well, maybe you don't. You just do your research and figure out which guys you think are good targets. And also know the draft class. There's a lot of talk about this class being weaker than some, and I tend to agree with that, but you need to know that before the draft. I mean, maybe it makes sense to trade your first pick away just because there's a prospect out there that you think already that you would rather have because you have them ranked higher overall than one of the first-year player draft players. So I really do think it's important to know the class, have a strategy, you know, figure out whether or not you can draft free agents, and then really pay attention to those later round picks. Don't assume that if you don't get a top 10 pick that you're not going to get MLB talent.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. Because, yeah, with Soderstrom, people are like, oh, he's probably going to be a catcher. And they just kind of saw the C next to his name. I'm like, all right, let me move on to somebody that's not a catcher. Don't overlook some of these guys. Like, draft the talent, and the rest will kind of, you know, figure itself out. It always happens like that. So, yeah, definitely great point. Don't charts, try to get, and it kind of goes back to, you know, the tiered base. Like, I don't think there's much of a gap. Like, for me, there's like 1 through 6 in my first year player draft rankings are pretty close overall in the grand scheme of things, like, which includes whether it's Marcelo Mayer, Khalil Watson, Jordan Lawler, Brady House, Jack Leiter, and Chris, I'm missing one. Who's that? Henry Davis. There we go. Like, I don't think there's like a huge gap overall. Like, in my overall rankings, I think they're like 15 spots apart. So maybe if, and you never know, people might value, actually, they will value them differently than you. So, and you know, maybe you can try to get the 4th or 5th pick instead of trying to trade up to 1, and you can maybe get the same guy that you already wanted. So that's definitely a great point. Clegg, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think people overvalue draft picks as well. So it presents a good trading opportunity. It seems like when the draft comes around, people just get overly excited. So, you know, I'm always willing to move it if it helps benefit my team. Because you think about it, a lot of these guys you're drafting in the FYPD, you know, take a little time to develop and contribute to your team, which is to be expected. But if I can trade it for a piece that helps me now, then I'm willing to do that fairly often. And I think, like Max mentioned, knowing the draft class is important, and that matters because you can, like, I'm willing to flip this year's picks for next year because I know that next year's draft class is star-studded. Like, it's just, it may be one of the best draft classes, could go down as one of the best we've ever seen. I think there's that kind of talent. So I'm willing to say, you know what? I don't need picks this year. I'll load up on picks in next year's class, and I'll do that all day. So I think knowing the context is important and being willing to say, like, hey, like, I'm not completely tied to these picks, I'm not completely tied to these potential players I could draft, because there's a lot of options that present themselves when people get excited about draft picks in the FYPD. Because in a dynasty league, that, like, that's your only time to draft. So people are like amped up and like, oh man, a draft pick, like, and they'll trade a lot for it. So it just is what it is.
Especially if you're like at the top team, and you don't really need to, you know, you're still going to be good next couple of years. So these picks aren't necessarily as important to you as a team that's in a rebuild. It's almost like, I call it the Belichick strategy. Like, the Patriots for the longest time were a championship caliber team. So Belichick would trade back, trade out, kind of get more and more and more picks. And then eventually, you know, you end up using them. So it's definitely, people definitely overvalue these picks sometimes. And I'm not afraid to trade down, trade out. Like, but for me, like, this draft class, yeah, it's down, like, compared to maybe last year or this year. But I think there's some people just think that this is a bad draft class, and it's definitely not. So zig when others are zagging, or whatever, vice versa. You can still find some pretty damn good talent in this draft. Like, you know, go check out Chris and I's top 100 first year player draft ranking. There's some really intriguing talent throughout that top 100. So definitely go check that out. And just, yeah, don't just assume this is a bad draft class. It is a little down, I will agree there, but still, I think it's still a decent draft class, especially at the top. It's a lot of intriguing players at the top. So don't think it's a bad class in general. But we're kind of going a little long on time, so let's go more into in-season management now, with terms of fab, waiver approach, trading, all of that. Let's start with trading, you know, because I think a big part of dynasty leagues, and I've kind of said it before in different articles and podcasts, you know, is, you know, trading. It's kind of like the stock market, you know, trade, buying low, selling high. It's like stocks, right? So I think that is I think part of maintaining a contender, more so, I think, is being willing to maybe take on some of the buy lows, right? Like, maybe right now, getting Anthony Rendon or a DJ LeMahieu or someone like that, whose value can be is pretty down right now, but acquiring them can really help you. If they have bounced back years, look at that. You've got a great, you know, a great value for someone. You probably can give up a few prospects or some players that are a lower level players to get a guy like Anthony Rendon right now. So buying low, selling high at the right time is definitely crucial. Mags, what are your thoughts in that regard?
Definitely agree that it's like the stock market. I mean, I think that's the whole thing with Dynasty, is you have to figure out at the right time, but figuring that out is the challenge, right? And that's what
it is, yeah.
Doing the research is important. What I've learned recently is that sometimes buying high is not actually buying high. And a couple of examples is like, or I think it's when someone's really starting to take off, like, being comfortable with okay, if you believe in what they're doing and you do some research, look at their numbers, maybe it's okay, even if they're starting to stocks go up, to still take a chance on them. A few examples of guys that I acquired this year, right when they were starting to peak up, were guys like Shane Boz, Cedric Mullins, Tyler O'Neill. I actually went after those guys because I had done some research and felt comfortable that where they were starting to, even after they were starting to perform, that they weren't going to be at their peak yet. And I think a lot of times I hear people saying, well, you should only buy people whose stock is down. It's really about finding the right time to buy. Mm. And sometimes, like with someone like Cedric Mullins, like, yes, if you got in on him before he did anything, he was dirt cheap. But for a lot of people, you kind of needed to see that he was doing something. And for me, early on, he was stealing bases. He was making contact. And it was like, okay, I'm going to take a chance on this. And someone was like, the person that traded him to me, I think, was thinking, oh, well, I'm selling high by, you know, maybe like a 150, 200 range player at the time, right? Which is certainly higher than what he was, but it's certainly not what he is now. And so I think it's important to kind of understand that there's a windows where either a player is, you know, the value isn't there yet, but is ticking up, or you certainly don't want to get stuck with someone whose value has just completely been eliminated. Like in one of my leagues, I got stuck with Victor Robles. I held a little bit long, and now it's like, what do I do with that player? So you that was a takeover team, so it's not like I drafted him when he was, you know, a top prospect, but I did hold on to him too long. So I think you have to be careful with that. The other thing, and I don't know if we're going to touch on this with respect to drafting at all, but with pitchers, I am a big believer in targeting trade for pitchers that are had the pedigree but that struggled at the major league level. I don't want to touch the top pitching prospects because you don't know what they're going to do. And there's been a recent case of pitchers that have really struggled, like the Whitley and Gore and Mannings of the world. But then you look at the guys like Giolito and Corbin Burns and Tyler Glasnow, Freddie Peralta, Logan Webb is an example that either came out of nowhere or had the pedigree. Webb didn't necessarily have the pedigree, but he kind of came out of nowhere. The other ones had the pedigree, but they failed. I really think that that's where the focus should be with respect to pitching. And so in trades, that's where I'm looking to focus my resources. In my 16-team dynasty, which is probably my best pitching staff, I only spent capital on one of my pitchers. Jack Flaherty, I acquired him in a significant trade. Other than that, my entire roster, I think of core pitchers, Freddie Peralta, Joe Musgrove, Logan Webb, Dylan Cease, Pablo Lopez, Tyler Molly, Patrick Sandoval, and Ranger Suarez. That's my core staff, very good staff, I think, for a 16-teamer. And I didn't spend capital on any of them because I either invested in them in the draft when they were super cheap, or I traded for them before they blew up. And you don't hit on all of them, but I think if you do that enough, you can build a pitching staff without having to spend a ton. Like, for example, Musgrove, I acquired him in the offseason for Andrés Giménez, when Giménez was kind of at his, now looks like his peak. And Musgrove was someone that people hadn't believed in yet. So I think that that's somewhere that I'm looking at for in-season trading, is really focusing on, as Chris mentioned, MLB guys that are, you know, might have another level but haven't shown it yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and those are all great points. And I think that kind of beckons the point you build around hitting. I think that's pretty important to build around hitting in a dynasty, because the success rate of pitchers, and then, you know, you go out and find those guys on the wire that are popping up, or you go acquire them cheaply as they're on the rise. But from a standpoint of, I never like to sell low. So like Cody Bellinger, I think, is like a perfect example right now. Like, his dynasty value is tanked. It's not there. I mean, at one point we were looking at him as the top five guy in 2019, and now he's outside the top 100 for me. But I'm not willing to sell low because I know that I'm losing value. And it's just like a stock, like we've talked about. Like, stocks go through their ups and their downs, but as long as you don't cash out on it on its low point, then you're not really losing anything. So I'm willing to keep like a Cody Bellinger on my bench for some time. And maybe this is a flaw. Like, maybe Cody Bellinger is just going to suck and I'm going to get nothing for him. And if that's the case, then whatever. But I think this is like his lowest value that we'll see. And so from that standpoint, I'm willing to hold on and hope that that stock, that player goes back up in value. And from there, then you can cash out. Because we look at it like that. I mean, players go through ups and downs all the time. And now Bellinger, you know, having the good playoff, hopefully he builds on that. And I think that that's from the standpoint of like, I never want to sell low if possible. I'm willing to hold on to the guy, especially if we've seen him perform at the high level before consistently. And we saw that from Cody Bellinger. And I've seen it enough where I believe that, no, I don't think he'll ever be a top 10, probably not even a top 20 player again. But I think he can get value back, and I'm not willing to sell really low right now. Buying high, I think that's something we're having to do more and more, because there's really – it's hard to buy low and sell high, because I think managers now are smarter than ever. And so you almost have to buy high if you want the guy in some cases. So buying low and selling high, if you can pull it off, then that's awesome. Like if you can negotiate that with a manager, then I'd do it all day. But I think people are getting smarter and smarter, and it's tough to do. So I would prefer to buy high if I really believe in a guy and never sell low.
Yeah, and it gets tougher when like everybody and their grandmother's writing like, oh, buy low on Aaron Nola or buy low on this guy. Like, you know, definitely, yeah, I definitely agree there. Before we get out of here, we can't have a dynasty strategy discussion without talking about how to approach prospects, because, you know, whether you're a win now team or a rebuild team, prospects play some sort of importance in your approach, right? Like with dynasty, it could be via trade or you got to build around these guys. So let's talk about approaching prospects a bit here. And I kind of take that same strategy about, you know, Chris, you mentioned just in general, hitting first. That is a strategy I would look at with hitting prospects, because we see a lot more of these. Well, obviously you get breakout hitting prospects too, but trying to get these lower level pitching prospects that can turn into something. I think that's the way I find a lot of my top pitching prospects end up being guys that weren't necessarily highly ranked a year or two ago. Like I have a lot of shares of like Peyton Battenfield and Logan Allen, guys like that. So that's how I try to build my staff. I'll try to get some top pitching prospects, sure, but kind of goes back to, I like to build around hitting in general. So I approach that the same in terms of prospects, where I'll try to build, you know, and I've kind of mentioned the 70-30 split. That's not like a concrete thing, but I do want more so of my top core hitting prospects to be hitters. And especially like for trade value, I think everyone kind of has that in the back of their mind. Like you mentioned Whitley, you mentioned Gore. People are like, oh, it's a tin staff. Like there's such a thing as a pitching prospect. Everyone kind of shies away from trying to trade for pitching prospects, I've seen, at least to some extent. So that's why I like to try to build that core of hitting prospects for multiple reasons, whether I want to trade them or hold on to it for the future. But Mags, what are your thoughts on how do you approach prospects in general?
Yeah, I touched on it a little bit on the last segment in terms of, you know, I really am looking at the pitchers that failed at the major league level and focusing on them more so than when they were top prospects. But to that point, I think it's important to understand who the top pitching prospects are, even if you're not drafting them, because 2 years down the road, you want to remember that pedigree. And a lot of the guys that I've been targeting were guys that were top pitching prospects that then struggled out of the gate. So I don't think it's a good approach to just completely ignore them. Right. Even if you don't draft them, I think it's important to understand why they are a top pitching prospect and what, you know, whether, you know, is it the high velo? Do they have a great curveball? I mean, those kind of things. You can remember that stuff even if you don't draft them. But I do tend to focus hitting. I looked at my teams to kind of just see what the percentage breakdowns were. I think in most, I was like around 65 to 70% hitting. I had two that actually went all the way up to 80% hitter prospects. Again, that's partially because I am looking at the MLB guys. But I agree with you, Eric. And one of my 16, those guys you mentioned, Battenfield and Logan Allen, I have them on. I also had Taj Bradley on that team. Some of those other guys right just outside the top 100. I kind of like, it's not necessarily a hardline rule, but I think kind of focus on the pitching prospects outside the top 100 that you think could be elite or top guys soon. And you're seeing that with, like, if you had gotten in on Trevor Rogers or Alek Manoah or Shane Baz or Shane McClanahan, there was a window there where they were outside the top 100, and now they passed a lot of those other guys. So I think that you don't want to ignore pitching prospects altogether, but definitely early in drafts, I do tend to focus on the elite hitting. And with that being said, the shallower the league, like I mentioned in the beginning, the more so I'm even focused on the elite hitting prospects, because I think that's what wins.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one other thing I want to mention before I throw it over to Chris here, look at the track record. I know it can be kind of hard, but look at the track record of MLB organizations. And, like, for instance, like Milwaukee and how they've turned out the last few years. Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta most recently. And, like, all right, Milwaukee is a good pitching development organization. Maybe you can be more confident in other pitching prospects from that org. So the Cubs have been good with hitting prospects. Tampa Bay has been good, and Cleveland's been good with pitching prospects. So kind of just look at what organizations are pumping out homegrown talents, whether it be hitting or pitching, more consistently. And then, all right, there's something there. So maybe you can, you know, be a little more aggressive in trying to acquire, you know, a certain player from that organization. I think that's a nice little under the radar tip that I like to tell people. So, but Chris, what are your thoughts on this?
You know, I may never draft a pitching prospect again in a startup, because here's a list of guys that you could have picked up this year that weren't even prospect relevant. Peyton Battenfield, you mentioned, he was a nobody before. Brayan Bello kind of came out of nowhere. Matt Canarino, he was a somebody. But Hunter Brown, Jake Eater, Cole Henry, Tre Jamison, like, none of these guys are rostered unless you're in, like, the deepest league. You could have picked them all up.
Yuri Perez probably was.
Yuri Perez, Randy Vasquez, Owen White, Angel Zerpa, Matt Brash, Spencer Strider, Xavion Curry.
Yeah, I was just about to say Xavion Curry.
Yep. Ryan Murphy, Carmen Majitsky, Bryce Elder, Josh Winder, Graham Ashcraft. Like, we could keep going on and on. So, like,
right,
from that standpoint, like, I'll always bank on the hitting prospects. So I've noticed my splits have gotten smaller and smaller with pitchers. Like, you know, in one of my dynasties, I think I've got 2 pitching prospects. We have 20 prospects, so 18 to 2. So, you know what? If I'm going to roster a pitching prospect, I want it to be someone that's close to the major leagues. You know, obviously, Yuri Perez type is, like, super intriguing because he's 18 years old and dominating. It's like, man, that's super enticing. But look at what we've seen over and over and over. Like, Mackenzie Gore, I think he's a bullpen arm. Forrest Whitley, don't even know if he'll make the major leagues. And those were, like, the 2 bona fide guys that, like, were can't miss pitching prospects. And so that leads me to, like, question everything. Now, you have plenty of guys that hit. We've seen guys hit, like Shane McClanahan and Shane Baz. And, you know, Shane Baz is a smaller sample. But I don't know. I just think the way to build is with hitting prospects. And honestly, no prospect is ever untouchable for me, because prospects are nothing but trade chips for me in a dynasty league. I never want to rebuild personally. I know you have to sometimes, but I'm always playing to win. And prospects are always on the table in a deal, because, you know what? I can trade a prospect. It doesn't affect my major league roster at all. It doesn't affect my scoring at all. Yeah, you may miss from time to time, and you're going to miss. It's going to happen. And I'll always be haunted. Go back to a couple when Juan Soto came up, the day he was called up, I traded him for Joe Adell and Bo Bichette. And it worked out. Like, Bo Bichette's fine. But, like, do I wish I still had Soto? Like, definitely. And for a while there, I was like, crap, this still sucks. You know, and it really hurt. But Bo's developed, and so it's been fine. But at the same time, it's like, Adell's obviously nothing. At that point, he was a top prospect. And so you run those risks, and golly, it's tough. But I'm always willing to trade, especially for win now pieces. And I do think that that's a prime time to cash out, because not everybody's a Juan Soto. So there's a lot of hype when guys debut. And so you typically get your best return then. That's what I like to do. I'm always willing to trade in the right deal, and no prospect's untouchable. Like a Jeter Downs, for instance. Like, I cashed out on him in several leagues, and I loved Jeter Downs. I cashed out on him early in this season, and his value just tanked. And I look back, and I'm like, you know, I wouldn't have been able to get those players that I got for him this time. So it's all about knowing when to sell. And that's tough too, because you never know when a prospect is at their peak value. But at the same time, like, no prospect's ever untouchable, I don't think. Like, you know, I'm even willing to move like a J-Rod or a Kelnick. Like, you looked at it, you saw what Kelnick did this year. You know, Wander, yeah, Wander could have netted you. I saw Wander before he even debuted net Mookie Betts. So, like, I'd do that all day. Kelnick, like, I would have moved him for somebody. J-Rod, I'll still move him for someone that can help my team win now. Not like a ludicrous deal, like, for an older player, but if I can get, like, an elite middle-aged MLB guy, I'm going to do it all day. So that's how I value and approach prospects from that standpoint of I'm always looking to deal them if they're right moves on the table.
I got a bone to pick with you right now, though. Bo Bichette is fine. Just fine.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. But Juan Soto is like an elite generational talent.
I know. I'm just picking fun of you. I was like, Bo Bichette's fine. He is much past fine, sir. Have you seen the hair?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The hair makes him – he could be the worst player ever, but the hair is like makes him more than fine.
I feel a lot better about that deal now than I did a year ago, even 2 years ago. Like 2 years ago, that deal sucked. But a year ago, still, meh. And now it looks a little better. Obviously, I moved on from Bo. I trade a lot, so Bo's no longer on my team. But I think Jordan and somebody else in that deal. So it's still looking okay.
Yeah, it's like you went from having a top three guy to Bo's like a top seven or eight guy. So it's not like you traded them for who's a guy like in the 30s, like Lindor and Joe Adele. You still got a top 10 guy right now. So so that wasn't too bad. But yeah, you did trade Soto. So that's the one guy. Like, I'll trade anybody. I'm not trading. If I have one Soto and you're listening, just don't try to get one Soto from me. It's never going to happen.
Currently, I would never move. In any deal, I would never move Acuna, Tatis, or Soto. Like, I just don't think I'd do it. They're so young and they're so established.
If I were, I would ask for the moon and Mars and Jupiter and Saturn, like, more than the moon. You wouldn't want to pay what I would want.
I would move either of those three for any of those plus like a Bobichet, which I don't think anybody would do, but I'd try. I mean, like, I'd really try.
Yeah, I would. If I was trading Soto, I'd want like Bo plus Devers plus Robert plus Jordan or something like that. Like,
something nuts.
To the point where the other person, first off, good luck trying to find a team that has four guys like that on the same team. Second off, that would want to trade those four as well. But all right, that's going to wrap us up though. Mags, thanks for coming on. We really enjoyed having you on.
Really appreciate it, Eric. Chris, thank you so much.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Like I said, we've developed a relationship with Mags through 30 Rock, and we wanted to have him on here to have this nice little dynasty conversation. That was a lot of fun. Thanks to everyone for listening again this week. We hope you all enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at EricCross04. Chris is at RotoClegg. Mags is at Mags_S20. And check out all of Chris and I's written work at FantrexHQ.com or over on our Patreon. And join us again next week for more Dynasty and Prospect Talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEACtion with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21
21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Rose is your name, but when you poop it sure don't smell like roses. Your number two burns the hair in my nose. But we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.